Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
So my view is just that I just choose to feel good, and that really drives my decisions. And therefore, because of that, it's not hard for me, but I can see how it would be if you didn't have those immediate repercussions. Mm-hmm.
Hey everyone, this is Judy with the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to episode 64 with Lori Morbitz, and you may recognize her name or her voice from episode 47, where we did a conversation with a few of the coaches from the coaching consortium. Primal First Health Coaching is Lori's business, and she is going to talk about today living the primal health lifestyle, which is in the way she coaches it, it's a holistic thing. So it's not just our food, it's kind of how we live our life as well. A big component is the food, but it is definitely more than that when she works with somebody. She's looking at their whole life picture as well. In the opening quote, she's talking about what drives her and keeps her on task, and she's going to share her story and the health issues that she had just huge shifts with eating this way. And what I think is interesting is that when you listen to her story, what you find out is that she didn't start out trying to heal herself with the primal lifestyle. She did the work of the research and trying various things and doing different things, and then discovered, hey, this is what I'm actually doing. This is what is working for me. This is what's making a life difference in how I feel, how my body is holding weight and inflammation. So she'll talk about this, that basically she's freed herself from the burden of diets and gym memberships. So that is, as a coach, what she wants to do, helping others get to and experience that place too. In other words, she wasn't trying to live primal or paleo and that's what worked. She just discovered that's what paradigm was working for her, and she's looking to share that with others. Another thing that sticks out, and I'm curious what you, the listener, thinks about when you hear this, is her statement of, I choose to feel good. And by saying that is saying, I choose to do the things that make me and my body feel good and healthy. And I think it's funny because you listen to that and you think, well, obviously, right? Like, don't we all do that? But I'm curious, do we all do that? And then what feel good are we feeding, right? Like, sometimes we're feeding the emotional feel good, and that's maybe not always so bad. But how often are we really feeding the feel good? And I think the bigger question there for many of us is, do we even know what feeling good is and can be? I think we all struggle with this, doing the quote unquote right thing. We all know various things that are quote unquote the right thing for our bodies, things we could do to treat ourselves better. And we all seem, many of us, I shouldn't say we all, because that's not true. I've known people who have found the right thing, like Lori kind of talks about, and boom, it's just in place. It's just what you do, because now it's just life and easy, and it's what you do. And that's not to say it's 100% always easy, but it's easy to make those decisions when you know what makes you feel good and what makes your body feel good. And I think that that's true. We also live in a world and a culture where we've got a lot of stuff coming at us to make not the best decisions for ourselves, and in a sense, not love ourselves or care for ourselves. We let over other things override our better sensibilities. I work with people all the time, and this is something that we talk about. Not to mention that we have media and marketing and sound bites that tell us to do something different all the time. So these are very interesting challenges that we each overcome individually in different ways and through our process. And sometimes the faster we can come to finding that thing that works for us that we can integrate as our life, and it makes it easy to make the right decisions, is a gift. And I encourage people to keep looking and searching and finding those things that work to discover how good we really can feel in our own bodies. And Lori is an option for that. What she's doing is an option. And I want to just say too, because, you know, I've explored various diets. We've talked about keto and vegetarianism and obviously primal. And my job is to present ideas and different ways of doing things that might resonate with you and help you find that thing that works. There was a Time magazine article, I think it was a year and a half ago, maybe now, that talked about what is the best diet. I think the title was like, what is the best diet? And if you read the article, what you find is there's no answer. The best diet is the diet you can do, the diet that fits you and your lifestyle. Something you can maintain, something that you don't feel deprived on. And that doesn't mean there isn't a transition period where things are challenging if you are making a bit of a shift. But there are good ways to do that, and there are beautiful wins on the other side, and Lori's going to talk about that. Lori also is offering a book giveaway that she's going to talk about towards the end of the podcast. In the beginning, we talk about some of the details. What does her life look like? What is the diet all about? And the second half is more casually about her experience and her journey getting where she is, what she experienced, how it's worked for her, and how she works with the clients. And she also talks about some of the transitions in eating out and some cocktails and food suggestions. She shares that work for her to have some indulgences that don't necessarily throw her body off track, that both taste good and feel festive. We did record this before the holidays, so you might hear references to that as we go along. Without further ado, here is Lori. Welcome back, Lori.
Thank you.
Good
Thank
to
you
have
for having
you.
Me.
Yeah, good to have you back. And for those folks who have listened to the podcast, we have talked to Lori. I don't remember which episode number it was, but we interviewed three coaches and you were one of them.
I was.
So we're going to go a little more deep dive into the work that you do. And this in coming into the new year, people are thinking about food and health and what does that look like for them? And I'm thinking this is a great time if somebody is thinking, I need to do something different. I need to either, you know, take charge or just even explore something and think about what's going on. Great time to think about the option that you have. And this is a great way to learn about your experience and what brought you here to understand why this might help somebody or why this might be something somebody might choose.
Right. I think that a lot of people make New Year's resolutions and they're looking to start off a new plan, a new way of life, reach some goals that they may have. And New Year's definitely is a good time to do that.
Right. Kind of wiping the slate clean. And plus it's a time, you know, I think some people focus on that because of the holidays. And thus we have this string of time where people have kind of went, okay, I'm just going to enjoy myself and eat what I'm going to eat. And the stress is there and all of the life stuff. And so this January thing kind of feels like a little bit of a break for some people, a little bit of a calmer and a renewing and cleansing time. So,
right. I think that's very true. You kind of get the holiday hangover, mm-hmm. so to speak. And starting off fresh on January 1st is really appealing to a lot of people, and yeah. for good reason.
Right. So talk about it. You're doing the Primal Lifestyle.
I am. For those who don't know, the Primal Lifestyle is a lifestyle based on human evolution, what we have been doing as a species for millennia. Well, my opinion is that the standard American diet and the food that we eat currently is actually the fad. I don't think paleo or primal is a fad. I think it was, you know, how we have been living and eating for many, many, many generations, and only recently with industrialization have we kind of moved toward this processed, fast, and chemically laden foods. So primal and paleo, to me, just kind of harkens back to epigenetically what we are truly meant to eat. So I focus my own diet and lifestyle after that. I've had great success with it, and because of that, I chose to go through a certification program, learn a lot more about sort of the science behind it, the philosophies behind it, and promote it with my own clients and friends and family and people that I know.
And we'll talk more deeply about this too, but one of the things I just want to point out is the fact that it's a lifestyle. It's more than just your food.
That's right. It is. Yeah. It encompasses a lot of different factors. Food is a big, big part of it. But there's also simple things like getting enough sunshine, playing, sleeping, stress reduction, exercise is part of it as well, and a lot of other factors that encompass a life, not just a way to eat.
So when you're working with people, when you're coaching them, you're looking at the big picture, not just food.
I think food is the basis, and a lot of people will focus on that because they have very specific health goals they might want to meet. Maybe they're sick, maybe they're overweight, maybe they've got some issue that can be helped by a change in food. But then once that's sort of sorted out, then you can kind of move a little bit more toward lifestyle factors, such as getting enough sleep and maybe reducing your electronics use at night, or getting more exercise or more sunshine, or just learning to relax a little bit and having a little bit more fun in your life, which overall, you know, would really be beneficial to a lot of people.
Yes, definitely. Well, and I want to, just to talk about my experience, because again, anybody who's looked at the podcast, I've interviewed people on keto, I've interviewed people with vegan. It's my aspect of what's available is very much dependent on the person and what they need, and helping people know what's available, because sometimes you can gravitate towards something and that might be not the thing, but maybe it gets you a step further to understand what your body does need. And paleo was the easiest food plan I ever switched to for me. I didn't have the afternoon tired slumps. I wasn't feeling hungry. I wasn't feeling cravings. It was just like I had prepped well for it, and I just moved right on into it, and it was great.
I think that's a lot of people's experience. You know, if you can commit yourself to doing it for even a short amount of time, like 21 days, you can really realize some beneficial health gains. I think paleo is easy, like you describe it, because it's my belief and the belief of the people that I studied under that really is the way we are evolutionarily designed to function and eat. And it just makes complete sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just sort of looking back, I think about all the things that I've eaten in my life and a little bit regretful about a lot of it. But, you know, because after I switched to the paleo and primal lifestyle, I had so many health gains that it was almost sort of like a eureka or aha moment,
mm-hmm.
you know, after I became well again, that I'm like, wow, I mean, this just makes sense. It seems very, very reasonable. It's, in my mind, fairly easy to do once you get into it. And it's gotten to the point, like in my own life, where I don't even think about dieting. I don't think about food plans. I just simply
It's just
eat.
What you do.
It's just what I do. And that comes with a little bit of practice, but like you say, it wasn't that hard to do. And mm-hmm. it's really, really simple once you get into it.
Nice. And that's a huge piece, to have something, you know, there's going to be this time of shifting. But man, yeah, once you're over that kind of weird little hump, and when I did it, I didn't really even feel a hump, but it was just, you know, it's so delightful to not care about sugar and some of those things, to have them not draw you to them.
Right.
So you had an autoimmune disease. So I would talk about the autoimmune disease you had, the health issues they were going through. What turned you on to this? And, you know, even what were you experiencing with your health issues, and what turned you on to this, and kind of the progression of getting better?
Okay. I have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. This is an autoimmune disease where your body produces antibodies that slow down your thyroid function. In essence, and I guess a simplified way of explaining it, is that your body is basically attacking your thyroid. It sees it as a foreign invader. You know, this happens in other autoimmune conditions with different body parts or organs, but this in particular has to do with the thyroid. It's not just simply being hypothyroid or low in thyroid hormone. Okay. It also encompasses a swing to the other end of the spectrum of hyperthyroidism or excessive thyroid hormone. So it's a kind of the hallmark, I guess you could say, of this disease, is that sometimes it looks like you're hypothyroid and sometimes it looks like you're hyperthyroid. So there's a swing involved. And genetically, I'm predisposed to this. There's several people in my family that have it. Generally speaking, you need the genetics for it. Oftentimes, you have environmental factors that can affect whether you develop it into a disease or not and feel the effects of it. And thirdly, generally, there will likely be an event that might kick it off, like pregnancy is one really common one, a severe illness. Sometimes we'll do that as well. Surgery, I mean, there's everybody presents a little differently, and when it kind of becomes full blown in your life, there probably was a precipitating factor. For me, I think I've always had it, but my last child just kind of sent me over the edge. And after that, I just got, you know, quite sick. I was diagnosed with it in 2006, but it was fairly mild at that point. And I saw an endocrinologist, and for about 7 long years, I just got sicker and sicker and sicker. The endocrinologist just kept telling me that, well, once your thyroid completely fails, then we'll put you on medication, and maybe you should just eat and exercise a little bit more. And I trusted what he was saying. I thought, well, okay, this is how it is. And that's what I did for about 7 long years until finally at the last appointment, which was in 2013, I said, I don't feel well. I'm sick and I would like to try something for this. And basically I was refused. And honestly, I got mad. I got mad enough after that appointment, I fired him. And I went and started researching and taking matters into my own hands about what could I do to help myself, because the medical community, unfortunately, was not helping me. So that's kind of started off my journey, which was in 2013. And for the last 5 years now, I have kind of perfected and experimented and tried a lot of different kinds of plans to get myself to the point of really good health. I tried a lot of different things, and by the time I had been through all of this experimentation process, my lifestyle reflected the primal lifestyle.
Okay.
And I thought that was just kind of funny, and I'm like, well, this is for me. I mean, this is, you know, I've sort of developed my lifestyle and diet to mirror this program that was out there. So I was looking for a program to get certification in so I could then in turn help others. And this happened to be the one that dovetailed with the lifestyle that I'd created for myself.
So you weren't necessarily going, okay, I'm going to try this primal thing. You were kind of going, this works, this food doesn't work. And in the end, here's the food I'm eating, here's the food I'm not eating. Oh, look at that.
Basically, that's kind of how it worked out. I mean, I tried a lot of things. I've done the Whole 30, I've done the Bulletproof diet, I've done the autoimmune protocol diet, which is really great. Well, way back in the day, I did Weight Watchers. I mean, I've just done, like a lot of people who have issues or weight issues, I've done a lot of different kinds of plans and diets. But ultimately, what worked or works for me now is this very simplified primal / paleo diet, which is how we're supposed to eat anyway. Long term, it just, for me, it's not even a diet, it's just how I live. Mm-hmm. And it's comes very natural to me now. You know, once I got on it, I felt so good, it just made sense, and I've just continued it and tweaked and perfected it for my particular body and lifestyle even further.
And I want to talk about that a little more, but I want to make sure, one of the things I'm curious about sharing with folks is, you know, you said that Hashimoto's is something that you're tested for, you have to be predisposed genetically. What might somebody be experiencing that might have them question, is this something that I have? You know, do I have Hashimoto's, and is that something I should be looking at?
The data shows that, in particular, most women who have tested for and have been diagnosed with hypothyroidism, more likely than not, have Hashimoto's disease. It's just so infrequently tested for that it's not a common diagnosis, but chances are if you've got thyroid problems and you're female, that could be a diagnosis for you. And, you know, getting to the point where you can ask for and get tested for it is becoming less of a challenge now with medical providers. They're a little bit more willing to test for that. But some of the things that you could experience having Hashimoto's disease, probably the biggest one is weight gain.
Okay.
That's a big problem. Fatigue is really a huge problem. Brain fog. I happen to get arthritis. Depression and anxiety are, again, hypothyroid symptoms. Depression, you know, reflecting the hypothyroidism, and anxiety reflecting the hyperthyroidism. Okay. That's a really common combination. Allergies, leaky gut syndrome is another big one. I have a real sensitivity to mold. That's kind of another problem I've sort of discovered along the way. And one of my most debilitating symptoms with this disease process was migraines.
Okay.
Which come to find out is, for me, related to gluten. If I eat gluten, I get a migraine headache. So I don't eat gluten for a lot of reasons, but that's like the number one reason I don't eat it.
Right.
And interestingly, my son is the same way.
Mm.
Yeah. So I think there's a genetic, you know, definitely a genetic component in a lot of this autoimmunity. And like I said, you may not know you have it. You might have it mildly. You might have symptoms that just can look like a lot of different things. Hashimoto's and thyroid diseases are kind of the great imitators. They can look like a lot of different conditions, as most autoimmune conditions can, where you get misdiagnosed with one disease or the other, or one condition or the other, when really it might be underlying thyroid problems. Mm-hmm. So it's really complicated. Every person is different. Every Hashimoto's patient presents differently, with either the symptoms that lead them to the diagnosis and then with the treatment after. Everybody's thyroid medication has to be a little bit different. There's no one fits all.
Gotcha. You
know, one medication fits all, one treatment plan fits all, one diet fits all. It's highly, highly specialized. And that's something that with the clients that have Hashimoto's, you know, I offer education about how they can look for and determine plans that might be best for them and where to find good medical care in our community.
Mm-hmm. That's a huge thing. It is. That's... When somebody has something to have a, once they figure out what they do have, to figure out somebody else who's had challenges with it to help them go through the process or figure out what questions to ask or just...
What test to order, exactly what to ask for. I have a client currently who was really struggling with sticking to a plan, not feeling well, not being able to lose weight. And I said, next time you go to your doctor, ask for these tests. So I suspect you have Hashimoto's disease. It just presented that way to me. I mean, I'm no medical professional, but I have enough experience with my own self and other people that it seemed like a logical conclusion. And lo and behold, she did have it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think knowledge is power. And, you know, once you know what you're dealing with, then it makes it a little bit easier to effectively help yourself.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So talk about the things that you do to support yourself. And you talked a little bit about the lifestyle things.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, for some people, the paleo concept is a little bit of it's a buzzword. And it's like you say, it's the kind of thought of as a fad.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't quite know what that means. I know from dealing with food sensitivities and allergies, I get very interesting comments sometimes about various diets or,
right.
you know, not yeah. only what's, oh, you can have coffee, that's gluten-free. Or,
well, yeah.
What is included in that? Because it's not as scary and limiting as sometimes people think it might be.
Right. I think a lot of people kind of hear the word paleo and think about, oh, that's the caveman diet. You just eat a lot of meat.
Yes. Right?
And that's not true at all. I think real cavemen, or if you look at Paleolithic history, they didn't often have meat.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't like the number one component of their diet. What paleo or modern primal, like the primal blueprint, which I advocate, means is that you eat a lot of fat, like really healthy fat.
Talk about what healthy fat
is. Healthy fat is not canola oil. Healthy fat is not PUFAs, I guess you could call it, vegetable oil, canola oil, all these kinds of processed oils. Olive oil is even a little bit on the edge of that, but to me, and what the primal diet advocates is saturated fat, even though that sounds scary, it really isn't. It doesn't lead to heart disease like you say. There's been a lot of like large metadata studies that prove that. Coconut oil is a really clean and healthy fat. You know, the fat that you would find on organic grass-fed animals. And I make the distinction between organic and grass-fed rather than commercially available meats. Those fats are healthy. If you are into dairy, organic and grass-fed cow butter can be very, very beneficial. And avocado fat is another really healthy fat. So there's a lot of fat that you can eat kind of with abandon, in my view.
Yeah.
That is really beneficial. In fact, when I first transitioned to this lifestyle, I cut my bad cholesterol by half.
Wow.
And I was ingesting a lot of fat. Fat happens to be, and I've tracked this with certain nutrition trackers, about 45 to 50% of my diet.
Wow.
I think that's pretty significant. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually function very, very well on a high fat diet, but that is in combination with a very, very low sugar and carbohydrate diet mm-hmm. as well.
And I know, and you can tell me if you know more about this, is that whole, that some of the things that I've read of the whole, when you bring down the carbs and you bring down the sugar, your body can handle saturated fat just fine.
Right. Yeah. And it's a very, very good fuel source. The distinction is that I'm a fat burner as compared to a sugar burner, meaning that fat is the body's preferred fuel. In fact, there's one more, even more preferred fuel, and that's ketone bodies, but you really have to be super low carb and super low sugar to reach that state. I actually don't function very well in that state, so I prefer one step down to being just a fat burner.
Okay.
So what being a fat burner is like your brain and your body prefer that particular fuel. Sugar and carbohydrates are not your body's preferred fuel, but most people think that they are, and that's where they live. That's where you get kind of high insulin production, a lot of inflammation in your body, and it can even lead to increased risk of heart disease because of that constant oxidization and inflammation that you're ingesting with either the sugar, the carbohydrates, or the processed food. So that's what I eat. I mean, basically I eat fat, a lot of vegetable matter, protein in the form of the best meat that I can get, and occasionally fruits. And sometimes I do have potatoes or white rice because I simply don't function that well on no carbohydrates. I need to have some in my diet, and those are the ones that I choose to have because I can tolerate them really well. Mm-hmm. And not all the time, mm-hmm. but you know, here and there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just out of curiosity, what does here and there mean to you? Like kind of a general sense.
Well, not every day. Like for instance, today I had a little bit of white rice with my lunch because I haven't had a lot of carbohydrates in the last couple of days, and I was feeling a little like I needed them. So I thought that was okay. And sometimes I will have some potatoes, again, every 1, 2, or 3 days probably. And I will even go so far as to have a piece of gluten-free bread or a crust, a pizza crust that is gluten-free, maybe like once a week.
Okay.
Because I want it, and I'm not that strict. Okay. And I can tolerate it just fine, you know, okay. as long as it's not every day. Yeah.
What about nuts and...
Yeah, nuts for me are fine. I don't have an allergy to anything. Like that. I don't eat a lot of them, but I don't sit and eat handfuls of almonds.
Right.
But if I want them, I certainly will have them if they're available.
And with a typical primal lifestyle, you're not having beans and lentils.
Right. No, I don't eat beans. Lectins is the property of legumes that can be damaging to people who have gut sensitivities or, you know, autoimmune disease processes like I do.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any oil that you eat with paleo?
I will occasionally use extra virgin olive oil in my cooking. Not a ton. I eat a lot of coconut oil. In fact, I eat it by the spoonful.
Okay.
Just straight up.
What about like avocado oil?
Yeah, I have used that as well. That's actually probably, if you were to have a liquid oil that you wanted to cook with, avocado oil is a really, really good choice. Okay. If you don't like coconut flavor on all of your food, mm-hmm. I think that avocado oil is a great choice too.
Can you get the coconut oil that's more, where the taste is more taken out? Which
Yeah, there's a lot, you know, I've experimented over the years with a lot of different kinds of coconut oil because I eat them straight up, like I said, and so my palate's a little more sensitive to certain kinds than others. But really, I think it's a matter of taste. Some people don't like coconut oil at all.
Right.
But you can get kind of, I don't want to say it's purified, but it's concentrated. It's called MCT oil, which is a medium chain triglyceride, which is distilled from coconut oil. And it's a pure form of the coconut oil fat. And it almost has no taste. So there's you can go from the heavily coconut flavored kind of coconut oil to this MCT oil, which almost has nothing, just depending on your taste level.
Right. And that is literally poured out of a bottle.
Right, yes. Yeah. It's clear. It's like a liquid. And you can cook with it or add it to your bulletproof coffee if you're into that.
Right.
Yeah.
And canola oil, what is in your experience or expertise around canola oil. What is the sort of the negative? Because that sometimes gets called out more than vegetable oil.
You know, I don't actually know a lot about canola oil other than it's highly processed, very inflammatory. And I think in our country, because the guidelines on food production aren't nearly as good as they are in other countries, like, say, the European countries, that you're not really getting very clean food. I mean, I think you're getting a lot of overly processed and chemicalized ingredients when you start going towards those mass-produced, cheaper oils like canola oils. Again, I'm not much of a scientist when it comes to oils, but that's my impression. That's what kind of the science that I've read has indicated, that it just simply isn't good for you. That a more natural oil like avocado or olive oil or coconut oil that comes from not that much processing is actually better for you. In my experience, it is. I go by kind of how my body feels on certain foods, and, you know, I don't have a problem with any of the high-fat natural oils, but I don't feel very good when I eat even like sunflower oil or some other like heavily processed oils.
I'm thinking of just partially my own, just thinking about this.
Yeah.
The heavily processed. So if somebody wanted to like sort of think about that, thinking about the processing, you know, like you say, the canola oil is more processing than the avocado or the olive oil. Do you know what the difference is with the processing and why it makes it more processed?
Well, if you're looking at a lot of the oils that we consume in our country, they're grown commercially. The plants that they are taken from are grown commercially. Chances are they've either been genetically modified for some reason to resist pests. Chances are they have been treated with glyphosate or some other compound to either ripen them or to keep pests away. And, you know, maybe the plant itself or the product itself that is used to make these commercially processed oils isn't necessarily a bad thing, but the growing process and the harvesting process and then the production of the food might contain a lot of other chemicals, agents, you know, to aid those processes, then I think humans can handle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you multiply that by the oil that you use, the bread that you eat, the things that you drink, all the things that you put on your food, the box of crackers you might buy. I think over time, multiplying all of the food that you're eating by the number of chemicals that are used to produce it, in my view, and even if it may not be scientifically proved, would have a, you know, deleterious effect on your body at some point. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that we are evolved enough to handle the amounts of chemicals that are in our food supply.
Yeah.
It just seems logical to me, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and no, I can make sense of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, my gosh, you think of our body has to process everything. It's got to deal with it. You know, we don't have this, like I say, it doesn't take in something and divide it all out and go, oh, that's a chemical. I'll send that one right on through.
Right,
I don't know.
Exactly.
We don't have to work with that. No,
yeah.
It's got to go through everything.
And then, you know, you can kind of extend that a little bit to the things that you put on your skin, on your hair, and your what you brush your teeth with. Lotions and creams and makeup and all those sorts of things. Once I kind of figured this all out, I really made a conscious effort to not put things on the outside of my body like I was. You know, I'm pretty careful about the things that I use in my own home as far as cleaning agents. I've just really tried to sort of reduce my chemical intake via body care products, household cleaning products, and the food that I eat. Just in this long-term hope that it does my body good. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the jury's still out. I'm hoping that it makes a difference. I know I feel better, whether that's just in my mind or physically. That kind of remains to be seen. But I think that for me and my family, it's just a choice that I've made to just reduce our chemical exposure.
And, you know, kind of the day-to-day life stuff, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, food and... Well, let me ask you this. When it comes to your family, does everybody in your household eat the same way you do? Is it easy when it comes to family food prep?
No, I have a family of four, including myself, and we all do not eat the same. I eat fairly primally most of the time. My son has celiac disease, so he is very conscious of the things that he eats. He's a little heavier on the sugar products than me, but he's a teenage boy, and he cannot eat gluten at all. Mm-hmm. So for him, it's a bit of a balancing act. And over time, I think he has become more and more aware of the food that he eats and how it makes him feel. And over time, with my example and education, he will probably eventually become primal. I just don't think he's quite there yet because of his extreme limitation on these gluten products, making him very, very ill. He's going to have candy because he can. My husband has slowly but surely kind of transitioned to more of a primal lifestyle. He's not 100% either. And my daughter is an athlete and she likes to go to McDonald's. I mean, she's a teenage girl and that's where she goes with her friends. And, you know, we talk about the choices that she makes. And like with my son, I think over time, she understands what my diet is like, what it has done for me. The foods that are available in our house are generally primal foods. And if she chooses to go outside of that, you know, she does go outside of that. But she does say that if she does it a little bit too often, she doesn't feel good. And so she goes back to eating a little bit better. So again, I do the best that I can in educating my family and providing the right foods for them, but they are their own people mm-hmm. and they make their own choices. And if they do things outside of the house that, you know, I might not necessarily do for myself, I think that's okay. They will eventually figure it out. Mm-hmm.
So talk about, I'm just thinking on, you know, if somebody's listening to this and going, okay, what does this look like?
Right.
On a kind of a daily basis, how do I live this? And yes, I know that once you get into it, it's okay. But what does it look like on a daily basis? You know, maybe talk about a couple days of what food would look like for you and snacks that you might either have available in your house, or for many people, it's like, okay, if I have fruit, you know, at least I got something healthy when you're not eating a whole lot of fruit. So right. I'm thinking the snacks that you might bring to work or even just have around the house, you know, when you're going out to eat or going to an event with all the holidays, what does that look like for you?
For me, I'll tell you what I ate today, which might be a good example. I don't eat breakfast. I rarely eat until maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And there's a couple different reasons for that. One, being a fat burner, I can go really long periods of time without eating without any ill effect. And in fact, I'm finding that in my regular work day, if I don't eat in the morning, and if I wait to eat until the afternoon, my focus and concentration is way better. In fact, if I have any carbohydrates for lunch, that just kind of goes out the window. And that's just my body in particular. So I start off my day with some coffee and a spoonful of coconut oil. The combination of those two things just kind of turns my brain on, and I can function most of the day just on that alone. And how it's kind of working out is that I seem to really be shortening my eating window to about maybe 6 hours a day, from my 1 or 2 o'clock lunch to maybe a 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock dinner with maybe some snacks. I don't really snack.
Okay.
But this morning I was a little hungrier, so I had brought some homemade meatballs, and that's what I had for a snack today, was some homemade meatballs that were gluten-free with, you know, high quality meat that I got from the local CSA. They're really good. It was just 3 of them, and it was just enough to kind of keep me going. And then because I haven't had a lot of carbohydrates, I did have some pork roast with some roasted vegetables and a little bit of white rice. And I had that at about 4 o'clock today. That's gonna be my dinner. I probably won't eat anything more tonight. Maybe a piece of fruit, because I save my fructose for later on at night. One, it kind of helps me sleep a little bit better to have a little bit of carbohydrate or some kind of fairly clean fructose sugar. I tend to sleep a little bit better, and I think that's really common for people. So that's kind of what my day looks like. I don't eat a lot, and I can go long periods of time without eating. And every day is a little bit different. I do eat eggs. I don't have a problem with eggs. Some people do. I don't. And I use them as a really clean protein and a very simple lunch most days. Most days I will just scramble some eggs in the microwave and put a little bit of grass-fed butter on them for some fat. And that's enough to get me through dinner. I can live on very little food during the day, and you know, like I said before, it's very freeing to be not tied to a 3-meal-a-day schedule. You know, you always heard that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. You need to have, you know, your whole grain cereal and your glass of orange juice in the morning. But I don't subscribe to that. I eat when I'm hungry, which usually isn't until later. I set myself up to, you know, not spike my insulin right off the bat. so I'm not continually feeding it through the day with more and more sugary and carbohydrate type food. It's just something that works for me. I've developed it over time. On the weekends, I might have breakfast a little earlier with my family. And I do find on the weekends when I start eating earlier, I tend to eat more and I eat, you know, more frequently during the day. It just kind of starts me off a little too early on my food plan. Mm-hmm. And I really actually prefer to wait to eat until a little bit later so I can shorten my window. And sort of the end result of this is I just, by how I eat, put myself into intermittent fasting on a fairly regular basis, which is great for weight control if that's what you're looking for. I don't really have to work at it. It just kind of naturally happens with the way that I've developed my eating plan.
I think that's an interesting thing to hear of the whole, your focus. You're still focused, and you're, if I eat too many carbs in the morning, I'm really focused all day on where is the next carb coming from.
Exactly, right. Yeah, and you get that way when, you know, once you start, it's really hard to get off that wagon, you know, mm-hmm. It just keeps going and going and going. Your insulin's running and you have to feed the beast.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's what my doctor said when I was doing paleo, and I said, you know, this has been great. I'm not starving all the time and I'm not tired in the afternoon. And she says, your blood sugar is even now. You're not having to deal with that.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah. So. The spikes for sure.
Yeah.
And I find it very energy giving. I think when people kind of transition to this diet, you know, you can kind of get the low-carb flu, so to speak. You can be dragging for a while until your body adjusts to burning fat rather than sugar. Mm-hmm. And it can be a little hard, for sure, for some people. But ultimately, kind of in the end, other than certain days that my disease process kind of keeps me in bed, and that does happen, you know, I have plenty of energy. I sleep well, and even though I have a day where I might not eat a lot of food, what to a lot of people would seem like a pretty pitiful small amount of food, for me it's more than enough, you know, to do what I want to do. I mean, if my activity level increases, of course I'm going to eat more. Right. But like right now in the wintertime where I'm not really doing a lot, I just don't need to eat that much food. I don't feel compelled to eat that much food, actually.
Right.
Because I'm not burning a lot of food right now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And again, that's contrary. You know, I mean, there's so many different concepts about how to eat and who knows.
Right.
You know, it ends up being what makes you your body feel good.
Right.
And like you say, what do you function and feel well on? And we know there are some success stories of people who have, like you're saying, you end up discovering you really need less food. And I know other people who, when they've started eating more food, that's when they started to lose weight.
Right.
And, you know, so there's all those kinds of things to think about or to at least consider.
Yeah.
And you don't do, if you don't mind me asking, what is your job? I'm just thinking in that whole focus thing. Like you're, you know.
I work in the legal field primarily for my day job. I'm a paralegal. I do a lot of research and I process a lot of data. A lot of medical records. I don't want to say it's a high stress job, but it's a high concentration job. So for me to lose focus in the middle of the day it's not good for, you know, my productivity in my day job. And I really enjoy it. It's interesting because I'm interested in medical things. You know, I read a lot of medical records for my job, which I find kind of fascinating.
I bet.
You know, just this whole seeing how people live their life and, you know, how many people suffer, in my view, kind of needlessly, when I think you can do really simple things by just changing your food to help yourself out. I think food is medicine. I think we are what we eat. And it just makes me a little bit sad that, one, I suffered for so long on the standard American diet. Figured it out when I was 45, which is kind of later in life.
Don't tell me that.
You know, it's just like, yeah, you know, I just think like you look back like, man, if I had only figured this out when I was 20. You know?
Right. Yes, exactly.
You know? But you can't really go backwards in time. It's all hindsight, right. Of course. You know, right. It was all an experience. But now I know, and I'm glad I found out. And I'm glad I found out in time to help my son who has celiac disease, you know, to influence my daughter who is only 17. And, you know, whether she chooses it now or not, she does have the education. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, has the tools to make a decision for herself later on in life,
right.
If that's what she wants.
And the opportunity to eat that way and how do I feel?
Right.
And then if she changes and, okay, I really don't feel
right.
Well, it gives her a base of something really particular to know. to go from.
Right. And, you know, that was kind of my whole thought process in obtaining a certification and becoming a health coach is that, you know, I had such a dramatic transformation by simply changing the food that I ate that it was just something that I wanted to share. It would be nice to have this totally fabulous career as a coach, but really my biggest impetus for doing it was just to help somebody else, if they wanted it, to feel better, to live life better. And it was so dramatic for me, the difference between what I felt like before and after, that I think it was kind of miraculous, a bit of a miracle. You know, I just want to share that with people who are willing to listen or who might be open to taking charge of their own body by just changing their food plan.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's amazing. It's amazing what it can do.
Yeah. Well, and it's so great. I mean, it's so great when you figure that piece out for you. And when you do start to feel better and you're inspiring me to go back and do paleo again, because I have done a lot of different things, and I haven't done vegetarian as much as I'd love for length of time to give it a go, but when I have not felt great. And I love the idea of being a vegetarian. Ethically, I love that concept.
Right. Yeah.
But when you just don't feel well, it's a little discouraging.
I think so. And I think as a philosophy, vegetarianism is pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of as a reality, being not herbivores and not strictly carnivores, either we're omnivores, we can survive off of vegetables and meat. I just think sort of logically it doesn't make sense, particularly to me. I've actually never tried being a vegetarian because I just don't know if I could function that way. I mean, I suppose I could try it once just to see, because I've tried just about everything else,
right.
But I think I would find it really, really difficult. I mean, I know I feel good how I do it now. And I guess sort of my ethical consideration toward animals who we as humans have dominion over is that, you know, I really make a lot of effort to source my meat ethically as I can. Mm-hmm. I participate in a local community-supported agriculture program. There's smaller family farms that contribute to it. They feed their animals appropriately. They're grass-fed. It's fairly organic. Obviously, sometimes you can't afford that, or you might have to make different choices. Mm-hmm. But when I do go to the grocery store, I try to buy the most ethically sourced food that I can. And my husband and I are hunters. So he's always been a hunter. And last year I said, well, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. And I went out with him. And, you know, we got a deer, so we do it caveman style and basically hunt down our own meat. So,
right.
And it's, you know, of course it's organic, you know, provided that the deer you're shooting have been eating a pretty clean diet.
Right.
You assume they have, right? So, you know, there's a lot of ways to approach sort of this ethical dilemma of eating meat by at least trying to make the best choices that you can. You know, animals contribute to our environment. I mean, they're an integral part of the circle of life on our planet, when everything that lives must die at some point. And it's like with fish, they have a fairly short lifespan. They're going to die anyway. I think you might want to get a little benefit from that.
Well, and too, the whole grass-fed versus grain-fed, mm-hmm. our body responds to that meat and the fat in that meat
differently
as well.
Yeah, I think there's a huge advantage to grass-fed fat than grain-fed fat, because, you know, a cow eating grain is not eating its natural diet, mm-hmm. and its body chemistry is going to be different, its fat is going to be different, you know, there's going to be chemicals in the fat from the grain, which is probably commercially produced or waste product going into these animals you eat. Like, they are what they eat, and you are what you eat. So basically, you're going to be eating what they're eating.
Right. You are what they eat.
Ultimately. Yeah.
Right.
It's another circle of life, but maybe not quite so healthy. Yeah.
What else am I not thinking to ask you about? Be it some thoughts you have about somebody who's dealing with an autoimmune thing, maybe questions they can either ask themselves or their medical professional that might get them to a different answer. I know there's a lot of people suffering out there who maybe they don't know that there are other answers, or they don't know if they can afford to work with a coach like you, or you know what I mean? Kind of all those questions of not knowing how to move forward. Is there any thoughts you have on that to help speed that process up of finding the right thing for them?
One of the wonderful things about our living in our day and age, and you know, some people might not agree with me that we're living in a great time, but you know, we do have the internet, and I think that's something that most people, if not everyone, has access to, whether it's in your own home, on your cell phone, or even going to the library. Mm-hmm. I mean, information is generally free. You can type anything into Google and get a lot of answers. Now, I think you have to be a little bit savvy about it and weed through. I mean, you know, taking the stuff that's on the internet as gospel is not a wise idea, but it does give you a place to start. Like, you could probably find, what test should I ask for when I go and see my doctor if you have or suspect you have a thyroid problem? You know, there are certain tests that you should ask for to get the most information. And I think that's true of a lot of conditions and symptoms and autoimmune diseases, that you could, you know, find the correct test to ask for and then basically hope to find a doctor that is willing to do that for you. Mm-hmm. Myself, I didn't find one for a long time. And, you know, the answers that I got were fairly incomplete and unhelpful for a long time. I've recently found an integrative medicine doctor who is very similar to a functional medicine doctor, kind of meaning that they are still Western medicine practitioners, but they do take a more holistic approach to practicing medicine, understanding that all of your systems work together, that you're not just a symptom, you know, that they're not just going to throw a pill at something and hoping that it'll go away, that everything is interconnected and, you know, are a little bit more willing to look a little bit deeper than an outside symptom as to what might be the root cause of your problem. And that's sort of been my kind of guiding principle for finding health on my own, is like, I want to look at what the root cause is of the things that are causing me symptoms or problems. You know, if you dig a little bit deeper, you kind of go far, a little bit farther down. You know, my root cause was Hashimoto's disease, so I started there and figured out, how do I treat Hashimoto's disease? And basically I had to do it on my own, but I did it on my own. What kind of foods do I eat? What supplements should I take? You know, what sort of lifestyle interventions can I do to ease myself from these pretty debilitating symptoms as they had come to be because it was so untreated for so long? You know, I got really, really sick. And once I kind of figured out, well, my root cause is Hashimoto's disease, now let's go forward and try to find the remedy to the root cause, which in my case, the number one thing was the change to a primal lifestyle diet. It's complicated. I think that everybody's different. Not everybody has an integrative medicine doctor that they have access to. And it does take some work to find answers, to research, to even get to the point where you feel comfortable in asking your doctor for a test. You know, some people just aren't. You know, a lot of people think that the doctor knows everything and, you know, may not be comfortable in saying, well, but this is what I need or I want, and will you please help me get this test or at least consider this request or condition might be, you know, the cause, you know, might be caused by something that we haven't discussed. You know, I think we're just sort of conditioned to accept the wisdom of our medical community.
Right. Yeah. Which can be challenging.
It's a little challenging. And, you know, there's a few of my clients who, again, you know, I am not qualified at all to give medical advice, but, you know, there's through my own experience, I know that there's resources out there that can help you gain the confidence to then go to your medical provider and demand better care.
Right.
You know, or at least help with finding some answers and outside of just a pill.
Right. Well, and taking, you know, I'm thinking of people who maybe don't feel like they are ready or know to, you know how to make that step to finding the integrative doctor, or just not even sure where to go, but taking advantage of medical discussions and free talks, and
right,
go ask those people, because right, sometimes they are the most knowledgeable in some of the areas that you'd be surprised, because they've had to research it and figure out their own stuff. I mean, it's like the things
similar,
that you know because of what you've had to go through and figure it out. And
and podcasts like this, there are a lot of people, kind of thought leaders in the paleo community that put out podcasts as well. Mm-hmm. YouTube has lots of different TED Talks even. I mean, there's really, in our day and age, there really are a lot of resources that you can access for free or fairly free, very little money, that offer you an education. And again, not everything everybody says is 100% the truth or accurate,
right.
But you can kind of take the good, leave the bad, try to find something that inspires you to make a change or to ask certain questions. I mean, if you can educate yourself a little bit, one thing sort of leads to the next, and you just start digging deeper and you start experimenting a little bit more, and you find this works for you, maybe this doesn't. And that kind of reflects my own journey from 2013 to the present. I've consumed a lot of information. I've tried a lot of different things. I've rejected a lot of different things. I've modified certain plans to fit myself. And over time, it's just become to the point, like we talked about earlier, where my process is one I don't really think about anymore. I just sort of live this way. But, when I look back, it was some work in the beginning, and trying different approaches and different supplements I've tried. Some that I know that I don't tolerate very well, some that, work out really well for me. It's been a long and it hasn't been a really arduous process. I think it's just been a little bit long, and that I finally come to a point, I'm now 50 years old, that I feel really good and I like my plan. It works for me. I don't have to think a lot about it. It's just become my lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a nice place to be.
It is. It really is. I now have room for other things.
Right. Yeah. The faster you can figure some of this out and you're not consumed by figuring out your food is a good place to be.
Yeah. Like being a health coach for some of my clients, I can cut that down quite a bit because I've already done all that research. I've already had all those experiences. I've already tried a lot of things myself, and I can guide and educate somebody to maybe reaching that point a little faster than the nearly 5 years it took me to get there.
Right. Mm-hmm. So talk about working with you as a coach. What does that typically look like for people when they work with you, and how are you there for them?
I have what basically amounts to a 12-week program that seems to be about the right amount of time to transition someone from maybe the standard American diet, or a lot of people actually know about paleo already, to transition somebody into a paleo diet or a primal lifestyle, kind of work through some of the challenges that might arise from elimination of certain foods or adding certain foods back in, identifying any issues or problems that might crop up at, say, week 6 or 7, reaching a plateau, for instance, or with my recent client, finding out she had Hashimoto's disease. So then we're going to direct it a little bit more toward dealing with this autoimmune condition rather than just being on a paleo diet to lose some weight. That sort of allows for a lot of variation and to kind of cover all of the bases as far as living the primal lifestyle. Like by the end of it, you're hopefully learning how to do some basic exercises if maybe you're not somebody that does exercises, and learning how to reduce your stress and sleep better, and having some fun in your life too.
Right.
Adding in the play factor. There's a lot of different things we do over the 12 weeks. I wanted to become a health coach not because I wanted to make a lot of money. I wanted to make a difference. So my rates aren't really that astronomical. I have a certain rate that I have for the 12 weeks, payable however you can afford it, that sort of thing. It's not my focus, but I do charge people because I think people want to be accountable to themselves. And money is one way to do that. If you're going to invest in yourself with some money, chances are you're going to follow through a little bit better with the plan. By the end of the 12 weeks, hopefully you have learned how to live the primal lifestyle, and you can continue on modifying and, you're making variations and tweaking it to best serve your lifestyle and your health needs. It's not meant to be just three months and you're done. Mm-hmm. It's really a transition into a lifestyle, which is meant to carry you on through your older years to where you're living the life that you want and the best health that you can manage, and just living a long life healthfully.
One of the things that I'm thinking of, and we're recording this before the holidays, but it's about after the holidays.
Right.
But I'm thinking one of the things I know that sort of stresses people out a little bit when they think about making any sort of a change like this is that whole going out to eat with their friends or being at a big event and that feeling of not being able to have something, and especially in that period of transition.
Right.
Anything you can toss out for folks who might be thinking about doing this and kind of just wanting an idea of how do I handle that?
There's a few options. You know, a lot of people go to parties and there's always that question about, well, you know, everybody is drinking a cocktail. What can I do? I have two options for that. One is I tend to drink my own little kind of concoction. I drink club soda with a little bit of cranberry juice and a lime. It kind of looks like a cocktail. It's fuzzy, you know, it's pleasant to drink, a little bit festive, and I'll have, you know, one or two of those on a night out. And I'm happy with that. I'm not a big drinker. I don't feel well when I do it, so it's just not worth it for me. Mm-hmm. But that's one way to participate in a, you know, fairly clean way, I guess you could say. Another is there's hard seltzer waters available now, which are gluten-free, very, very low sugar, and very, very low carb. So that's another option if you wanted to, you know, have a drink. That's a very easy option to have a little bit of alcohol if that's what you choose to do with not a lot of repercussions, especially if you're on a gluten-free diet or a low-sugar, low-carbohydrate diet like the Primal Diet is. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that I do if I feel like I want to have a drink. That's what I will do. And not a lot of them because, you know, I just don't do that and it's not worth it for me to feel that bad the next morning. Mm-hmm. But that's an option too. As far as going out to eat, there's a few restaurants in our area that serve really clean food. I know what those are. I've kind of done a little bit of my research on that. But if I do go to just a regular restaurant, I kind of keep it to as clean a food as I can possibly get, a salad with a piece of protein on it, like salmon or chicken. I don't really do the dressings too much, and I kind of stay away from cheese. So most restaurants you go to, there's always going to be something that you can get. And, you know, generally it's going to be a salad with a piece of clean protein on it, something grilled. As far as like going out and being with, like, for instance, my family at Thanksgiving or Christmas, honestly, I just eat before I go. And if there's something that is on my plan when I get there, that's great. But if there isn't, it's okay. You know, I just have some, most people serve vegetable trays, and I've gone to functions where basically that's all I've eaten. But I'm still participating. I've likely fed myself before we went in case that were to happen. And those are just some strategies that I've developed over time to kind of handle situations where I know there's probably not going to be a lot of option for me. And I do that because, one, gluten gives me a migraine. It's just not worth it for me. Sugar doesn't make me feel very good. Regular alcohol, beer products, anything like that just don't make me feel very good. So it doesn't really become that hard for me to avoid those things because I know what the repercussions are. Mm-hmm. And maybe in that sense, I might be a little bit different than somebody that might just be trying to lose weight because I have real repercussions from those things, immediate and unpleasant. You know, somebody that maybe not doesn't have an autoimmune condition or other issues, if you have a beer, you may not really feel what it does to you.
Right.
You know, you might not. That might make it just a little bit easier to have it. For me, it's easy to avoid it because I just simply cannot tolerate it, and I know what I'm going to feel like.
Right.
And well, it's not worth it.
Right. And sometimes when you start to feel better on a consistent basis, and then you eat something that makes you feel worse, you know, you're not necessarily feeling worse than you had felt before. You're just not feeling better. And then that worse feels like, oh, you're really noticing that worse.
And right. And then it can kind of compound, you know, if you kind of keep going down that path and you just, you know, it's slow and gradual. But then a month later, you're like, boy, do I feel bad.
Right.
Where did that start? And it's just like a really slippery slope to kind of start going back down that road a little bit again after you worked so hard to feel better.
Right.
So my view is just that I just choose to feel good, and that really drives my decisions. And therefore, because of that, it's not hard for me, but I can see how it would be if you didn't have those immediate repercussions. And that's one thing that we work with clients is like, how do you get sort of past that mental block of wanting something because it's what people do, it's what you eat at Christmas, you know, my family always has this special drink or this special dish, and how do I say no? you know, those are kind of tricky situations to navigate, and it takes practice, but you can do it. And ultimately, you know, it really comes down to, what do you value for yourself? Do you value feeling well? Do you value how healthy you feel when you don't have those kinds of things? And is it really worth it for you to eat or drink those things that just aren't going to help you reach your health goal?
Right. So if somebody is curious and coming to you, obviously, I'm sure many people are, when they're looking for you, they're looking for a primal coach. They're like, okay, this is the decision I've made. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for somebody to help. But would you welcome somebody calling you or contacting you and saying, hey, I'm not quite sure this is what I want to do, but I keep hearing about this, or whatever the case might be, and kind of talking them through that piece of it to help them understand how it might affect them or what it might look like, just out of that kind of curious space mm-hmm. of, I'm not sure what I want to do, but I keep hearing this word over and over
again. What I generally offer to begin with is a free consultation, a conversation really, between me and any potential client who might be interested in this plan, to kind of go over those things. I mean, is it something that you can do? What is it all about? What would it take? You know, what does it entail? What is the primal diet? What is a primal lifestyle? What's the difference between primal and paleo? I know, so we can go over all of those things to kind of give some education about what it is that I do. And are we a good fit? You know, people have different personalities, and I might work really well with one person, but maybe not so well with another. Part of the introductory conversation is just to find out, do we click? You know, do we have a rapport? Are they open to what I have to say? Are they really looking for education? Do they feel like I can give them what they're looking for? Do I have some of the answers they might be seeking? And, you know, just kind of making sure that we mesh as a coach and coachee and that, you know, we're going to be, you know, working well together. But in that conversation, yeah, I would be very happy to, you know, talk about the primal lifestyle and what exactly it is. I have a lot of resources, and over the years I've developed a lot of, in fact, I put together a list of all of the books, all of the podcasts, all mm-hmm. of the Facebook pages, all of the websites of people that I have gotten something from in the last 5 years that I am willing to share, you know, with others as well, because I've taken the time to sort of winnow down the good stuff
right.
that is available for people who are in my situation, like say with thyroid or autoimmune disease conditions. So those are some of the things that, you know, I think I have to offer, is really, you know, a lot of encouragement, a lot of education, and the resources that I've gathered over the years to help people kind of take charge of their own health, mm-hmm. you know, and hopefully learn something and make some changes and, you know, kind of put themselves on the path to lifelong better health. The kind of health that allows you to do what you want, live the way you want to live, you know, not being tied to this or that diet or this plan or XYZ you have to do on a daily basis, and that you're just simply living, you're eating the way that you're supposed to eat, and, you know, that just becomes second nature, and, you know, you're spending your life thinking about food, dieting, or trying to lose weight. I mean, that can really suck up a lot of mental energy, mm-hmm. a lot of time, a lot of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my view, I don't choose to spend my life that way. I would rather do other things. I would rather live a fairly natural lifestyle. I don't belong to a gym just because I'm not really fond of going to the gym. But, you know, it's not like I don't exercise. I do things in a, for me, a little bit more natural way. I like to walk my dog. You know, I like to ride my bike. I like to chop wood out at my property. I like to mow the lawn. I mean, I do a lot of things that are physical, but just because of my nature, I like to accomplish things at the same time. So,
right. Yeah.
So raking the lawn is, you know, functional exercise. I think that's great. And you're just kind of killing two birds with one stone. You're getting outside. You know, that's part of that. You know, getting enough sunshine and vitamin D in your life as well. And I just find that way more enjoyable than going to a gym 3 times a week. It's just for me personally, that just doesn't do it for me.
Right.
You know, I have other ways of exercising that I enjoy more. Mm-hmm. But then it just kind of comes down to I just want to be healthy, and I don't want to think too hard about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've kind of set myself up to the point where I eat what I eat, I live the way that I live, and I don't really think about it that much
mm-hmm.
for myself. I do think about it a lot for my clients.
Right.
Because more often than not, they're kind of at the beginning. And I really enjoy that because I like the education, I like the research, and I like the knowledge gathering and, you know, and of course the helping people to, you know, reach their potential, their health potentials, you know, with not a lot of effort in the long run.
Yeah. Well, and that's great news for many people when you're not going to tell them to go join a gym. That's a big win for a lot of people. And if you think about it, you know, our grandmothers, you know, when did our grandmothers have a gym membership and workout clothes?
Never.
Right. So, you know, they were doing something because they were in better health than we are today, typically.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So granted, we have a lot of sit-down jobs.
And modern conveniences where we don't really have to work that hard,
yes.
For sure. Yeah.
When you can sit there watching TV while you're on your smartphone and control your TV, the volume and everything from your smartphone.
Right.
You know, and you don't have to get up and do anything. Yeah. It is kind of crazy.
Yeah. I don't have kind of to that point, too, I don't really have a big social media presence. I enjoy social media, but I don't really enjoy participating in it in a really direct way, which probably is a little more hurtful to my quote-unquote business.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I just don't find that serves my purpose in life. You know, I love to talk one-on-one to people about what they eat, you know?
Right. What? One-on-one, talking to them face-to-face?
I think that's where it's at, you know, and kind of this whole social media thing is a little... It's a little harder for me to wrap my head around that and to participate in it. I'm just not very good at it. But like I said, I could talk about food and paleo and primal and epigenetics and fat and all those sorts of things pretty much all day long. I think it's an extremely fascinating topic, and I like to hear people's stories, where they were, where they want to go, you know, how can I help that? I've got my own story that actually was published on social media, which is kind of funny, but, you know, it was just I wanted to share what my story was, what my health story was, and my programs that encouraged that. And then they published my story on their website, and that basically went around the world. And honestly, that's where I get a lot of my clients from, are from people who have read that story and take some inspiration from it. Honestly, a lot of them are people like myself, middle-aged women who have autoimmune conditions or 50 pounds of weight that they want to lose, which is about what I lost when I went on this diet. I was quite heavy and very sick and very inflamed. So, you know, by changing my diet and not doing a lot of exercise, I lost, I think it was 47 pounds in a very, very short amount of time, and went back to my normal weight because I was overweight and not feeling very, very good at that point. My body right now is where it wants to be. It's been here for 5 years. Whether I eat a lot or don't eat a lot, or exercise or don't exercise, it's sort of found its groove and has basically remained the same for 5 years, you know.
Wow.
Just on its own.
Right. We hear people talk about this, and I want to know what your experience is.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, I was inflamed. What does that mean to you? How did you know that you were inflamed?
Well, I was carrying 47 extra pounds when I cold turkey switched to basically what turns out to be the primal eating plan. I lost 20 pounds in 21 days. And I believe it was inflammation. And I think a lot of people find that too. It took me a little while to lose the other 25, 27 pounds, but about 3 or 4 months, I think, total. But I was puffy, and I believe it was inflammation from the foods that I was eating, because when I gave up gluten, dairy, soy, sugar, grains, that just fell off. You know, it was a little alarming, kind of, because it was so quick, but it was just amazing how much better I felt after 3 weeks, you know, with the majority of that weight off. I'm sure you've heard of the term, you know, leaky gut.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people suffer from that, and basically it's perforations in your gut allowing the chemicals and other things that are on our standard American diet getting into our bloodstream and therefore into the rest of our body and organs and all those other things. You know, when you eat clean food, food that doesn't have those properties in it, chances are your inflammation is going to go down. And for me, that meant a lot of weight coming off.
Wow.
Yeah. It was dramatic.
That's a big deal. Yeah. What a weight loss plan
it was. It was hard and it was a little brutal, but it was just actually kind of amazing. I didn't exercise. I mean, that was just simply...
That was just a food shift.
It was a food shift, and it was all of the inflammation that my body was experiencing in reaction to the foods that I was previously putting into it that just completely fell off by simply just changing my diet. It was dramatic, very dramatic, and like I said, it took me a couple more months to get the rest of it off, but it did eventually come off and then basically has stayed off with no very little effort on my part. Like I said, I'm not a gym rat.
Right.
I've had a lot of other physical challenges, mostly because I have osteoarthritis, which has helped immensely by this plan as well. Regular arthritis and osteoarthritis. I get a lot of bone spurs, so I've had a few surgeries in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And even with being laid up from various surgeries to take care of this osteoarthritis problem, you know, I still don't gain weight as long as I stick to my plan. And in fact, I just had a foot surgery recently, and I wasn't feeling very good after it because of all of the drugs and anesthesia and taking Tylenol and Motrin nonstop for however many days it was. I mean, it really affected my mental health state and my physical state. So I occasionally put myself on what Isabella Wentz, who is a Hashimoto's sufferer and pharmacist who wrote a great book called The Root Cause, advocates a liver protocol. So I put myself on that for 2 weeks and basically, in my view, kind of detoxified myself from the effects of all of the drugs that I had been put on for this surgery, you know, elevated my mood right back up. And, you know, I was sleeping better. I felt better. My pain was less. So I really believe that food is medicine. And, you know, you can have these specific protocols that you can put into place, which is what I do occasionally when I need it, to sort of rid yourself of the toxins that might have crept into your body, you know, to kind of reset and give yourself back that good health that might have gone a little bit by the wayside after some surgery or some illness or, you know, whatever might befall you. Things happen in life. And I think that there's a lot of ways, at least that I've discovered, that can speed along the process a little bit from healing from, you know, something like a surgery.
If somebody's looking to get a hold of you, how do they do that best?
I have a number of different ways. I actually do have a Facebook page, which is called Primal First Health Coaching, at Primal First Health Coaching. I do have an email for my business called Lori@primalfirsthealth.com. So that's LORI@PRIMALFIRSTHEALTH.com. PrimalFirstHealth.com. And my phone number is 218-340-1253. I'm also found through the Primal Blueprint Health Coach's website. I do have a link on that page, and you can look me up by my name, Lori Morbitz, or you can seek coaches in Minnesota, which is where I live, and that will direct you to all of the Primal First Health Primal Health coaches in Minnesota. You can click on my picture or my contact information. It'll be on that website as well.
The Coaches Consortium as
and
well.
Also through the, and also through the Northland Coaches Consortium website, I can be found as well.
Do you want to talk about the giveaways?
Oh, right. I would welcome any, inquiries into Primal First Health and to the paleo diet. If you just want to call up and chat and talk about what options you might have toward bettering your own health through this plan, I would love to offer, if you mentioned this podcast, I would love to offer you a free PDF of the, it's called the 21-Day Total Body Transformation through the Primal Blueprint, and I can definitely send that on to you so you can take a look at what Primal Blueprint and the Primal Health Lifestyle are all about. This is the plan that I use in my coaching practice. It's the plan that I live myself, and I think it's a very effective way to gain good health without a ton of effort. It's something you can do for the rest of your life fairly easily once you get into it, and hopefully free yourself from the burden of dieting and gym memberships.
Yes. That is a huge freedom right there. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's my goal in life is to not make it hard on myself and do things as easy as possible.
I'm excited. I mean, if anybody does hear this podcast and does this and works with you, I invite them to get a hold of me and or put something on the Wellness Renaissance Facebook page about their experience and their success and how they're feeling, and you know, help other people. It's like I say, I'm not so much about promoting one particular thing. I just want people to find what works, and I can make a lot of sense of this. And there are so many people who are doing really, really well with Primal. You know, for some people, like you say, some people do keto and that works for them. And that some people, that's great for a little while, but it's not the end all be all. And this is a nice place to go from that too. If that's something somebody has tried and maybe figures out, oh, it wasn't quite for them. Well, look at this, you know.
Right.
Take a look at what this might offer as well, especially if they felt good on it at all. Like you say, there's that transition time when you start something where some people's bodies, it takes a little time to like just let the junk go. Mm-hmm. And then once you get on the other side, it's a freedom.
And I think one of the tenets of the Primal Blueprint and the Primal Lifestyle is that for most people, like an 80% compliance is great. I mean, you are a human being. You do go to dinner once in a while with your friends. You know, you might want a beer once in a while. Most people can do an 80-20 split. So 80% of the time, you follow the Primal Plan. And 20% of the time, you live your life like a regular human being. Unfortunately, for me, I cannot do an 80-20 split. That just doesn't work for me. I'm a little bit more compliant. I am a 90 to 95% person most of the time. And that 5% might be, I might have some cheese once in a while. You know, if I can tolerate it just fine and I'm in the mood, that's what I'm going to do. And I might have some corn chips once in a while, and that's okay. You know, I don't have to be 100%. I live my life just fine at 90 to 95%. I feel really good. You know, my weight is stable. My mood is stable. Everything is fairly stable. So I can afford once in a while to go a little bit outside the bounds of my own personal plan and be okay with it. You know, I always get right back on and it's fine. But, you know, I think that getting yourself into this diet mode where it's do or die, where if you make one little slip up, you know, you're doomed, and why continue? Because I'm just not going to be successful at it. You know, I think that's a really heavy mental burden to carry, to feel like you have to, you know, be 100% perfect for something to work. I think it just sort of leads to a greater likelihood of failing or not being able to be successful with any given diet or plan if you slip up one little bit and you think that you've ruined the whole thing.
Right.
That's no way to live, in my view. And I think that the Primal advocates it's with this 80-20 split. I mean, I think that's reasonable. I think most people can do that and generally, you know, feel better. I mean, if you want to be 100% for the first 21 to 30 days, I think that's highly recommended. But then eventually you find your groove and you find your number. You know, you find the percentage where you feel the best at. For me, it's 95%. That's just where it falls for me. Not everybody's like that. Mm-hmm. Some people do great at 80 or 85. And, you know, some people who are even really struggling to stick to the plan, you know what? If you can do 70%, that's great. You're doing something. Mm-hmm. You know, you're making strides. You're getting somewhere. You're doing the best you can possibly do for yourself in that moment. Mm-hmm. And then maybe later on, you might want to try to bump that up a little. You know, we just work your way toward it. There's always successes to be had, even at a lower percentage of compliance, you know, with this particular plan. So, you know, my goal is to just assist people in finding the right way, trusting themselves and their body and their choices, to move forward in the most healthful way that they can, and to live the longest life that they can possibly live in the healthiest manner, and, you know, living the way that you want to live, doing what you want to do, and being able to do all those things because your health is not holding you back.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you.
Well,
thanks
thank you
for
so
being
much.
Here.
Yeah,
and I look forward to hearing about success stories.
Yeah, me too. Give me a call. I'd love to talk to you.
Lori gave a lot of great contact information as well as some books and resources. And you could find them on the notes page for the podcast on the website. And of course, if you do connect up with Lori, don't forget to mention that you heard about her on the podcast and get that 21-day total body transformation through the Primal Blueprint book. I own it myself, and it is a good guide to understanding the big picture and the details of what this is all about. One of the things that Lori mentioned to me when we were not recording, she had basically said, you know, when she went into all of this, she was looking for good health. And the fact that the weight came off, just for her, she said, was just a bonus. The search was for feeling better. And the weight was a welcome and happy side effect. It's so nice when the side effects are good things. Thank you so very much for listening to the podcast. Please do check out the other episodes at wellnessrenpodcast.com. Hop on the website. You can join the mailing list so we can just make sure that you don't miss any episodes through a quick email that we send out to you. Please feel absolutely free to share this episode with somebody who you think might be interested or curious, or the whole podcast concept in general. Anyone who's interested in health and wellness and learning about different modalities and people and the way our body works and our brain works and food we can eat, all that fun stuff. Thank you so much for those of you who have shared. I really, really, really do appreciate it. And to those of you who have become patrons through the website supporting the podcast financially, if you are able and you would consider this would be fantastic. We really, really do appreciate that. $1 a month is all we need to do, 25 cents an episode for the most part. And I think if you work that out through the year, you get a few free ones. but that is huge in helping us pay the bills and know that this is something that you guys are interested and excited about, and that I can keep going forward and doing it. That is absolutely what I want to do. So if you find this valuable and the information valuable, please consider supporting the podcast in one way or another. I want to send a huge shout out and thank you to Laura from Minnesota. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast and becoming a part of the Patreon community. Thank you so very much. The support really sincerely is appreciated. On that note, thank you so very much again for listening. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week. And until then, may you continue to find the pieces that fit into your health and wellness puzzle. Take care.